Welcome to the Rational Faiths Podcast. I'm Brian Kissel.
And I'm Brian Dillman.
For those who have never listened before, Rational Faiths is a Mormon-based blog and podcast seeking to provide a safe, fair, and balanced space to discuss the complexities, difficulties, and beauty of our Mormon tradition.
In an entertaining and informal way, we are dedicated to exploring the vital, applicable, and expansive topics that we are all wrestling with as Mormons, while simultaneously keeping Mormonism weird.
So, Brian, I have a question that I wanted to talk to you about for this first episode. So, when you hear the word the Sunstone Symposium, what do you think about? Or, and maybe another way to ask that is, have you ever been to the Sunstone Symposium?
I have never been to the Sunstone Symposium. I almost went to the Kirtland one last year, but then I had something come up and kept me from going. But what I think about is a bunch of Mormon nerds talking about Mormon stuff. It's like the blogs turned into, made a little bit more formal, a little bit more educated maybe, and then just talking about the same stuff that they talk about on the blogs, I imagine.
Yeah, that's a pretty close thing. Like for me, when I first kind of heard of Sunstone, and I've talked about this before, but about like 5 or 6 years ago, I started going through my faith transition, and that's when I started attending the Sunstone Symposium. And when I started going, it was like really scary. Like that was the weird kind of crazy people that you so I was really nervous about going, but one of the things that I've noticed as I've been going over and over, it's actually, I just love it. It's one of my favorite times of the year. It's so interesting to see the incredible diversity that actually exists in some of these different areas that you wouldn't even really know about. So what I was wanting to do for this episode is, at the Sunstone Symposium, I had the opportunity to do a whole bunch of little short interviews where I was asking some specific questions to various different individuals who were at the Sunstone Symposium. And it's really entertaining. I got tons of material, so we're going to break these up into a couple different episodes. But what we'll do is we'll go ahead and just present that, and then in later we'll show those other things. But for me, it's like, I think this will be a really good way to kind of demonstrate what you could be attending, or the kind of people who are attending Sunstone. So perhaps we could just go ahead and jump right into that. So let's jump in with the first question.
Okay, so the first question in these interviews is asking these big shots, if you will, at Sunstone to tell us about themselves, to publicize some of the things that they're doing, and that way everyone can know who they are and what they're working on right now.
All right, I'm Lloyd Erickson. I'm the managing editor of Greg Coford Books. Been with the company for about 5 years now, and just overseeing the great publication of some of our wonderful titles that we've been doing, such as things I'm excited about is David Bacavoy's authoring the Old Testament, as well as Michael Austin's Understanding Job titles, and other books in this Contemporary Studies in Scripture series we're doing. Also, an exciting book we have coming out real soon is Nyalyn McBain's Women at Church, which is creating a lot of hype, and I hope will create a lot of discussion forthcoming.
I'm Maxine Hanks. I guess my claim to fame is that I'm one of the September 6, but I recently returned to the church in 2012 and was rebaptized, and am now a fully active temple-going member again. So that's an interesting tension. My background is in, I studied communication and humanities, and then I went to the U of U and did my undergrad in gender studies. Then I did grad work in history and religious studies at a couple of different schools. And mainly my path the last 15 to 20 years has been ministry studies. And so coming back to Mormonism in 2012, I'm bringing sort of 20 years outside of the faith in clergy training, ministry studies, chaplaincy, interfaith ministry, and kind of bringing that back to Mormonism with me, which is exciting.
Well, I'm Boyd Peterson. I'm the program coordinator of Mormon Studies over at Utah Valley University. I wrote a biography of Hugh Nibley, and I recently published a collection of essays called Deadwood and Rushing Water. It's a collection of essays on faith and culture and family and just different. I kind of think of it in terms of the Gene England back in the day, he published a lot of collections of just personal essays, his personal thoughts on things, and so that's it's modeled in that kind of in that perspective. Yeah.
My name is Brian Whitney, and I currently live in Clearfield, Utah. I grew up in Seattle, Washington. Was a research intern with the LDS Church History Department for about a year and a half. I am currently out in Nauvoo for the summer, working as a research fellow with the Community of Christ Historic Sites, and I'm finishing up my undergraduate at Weber State University in History and Sociology, with an emphasis in American religious movements.
This is Bob Reese. I have been involved in Mormon scholarship and studies for almost all of my adult life, and currently teach Mormon studies at Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley and at University of California at Berkeley. Very interested in the relationship of faith and reason and of the dynamism of faith within the Mormon construct, and just interested in everything having to do with Mormonism and religion and life.
Hello, my name is Natasha Helfer Parker, and I am a marriage and family therapist. Been in practice for about 17 years. Currently run a private practice in Wichita, Kansas. And you can find me on the Mormon Therapist blog, or Mormon Mental Health Podcast, or right now we're very excited to be starting the Mormon Mental Health Association.
Okay, I'm Jeff Burton. I'm the author of the Borderlands, Braving the Borderlands column in Sunstone Magazine. Been doing that for about 10 years. I have a book for those who wonder, and a website for thosewhowonder.com, where you can get all the previous columns. There's about 50 of those, plus a free download of my book, For Those Who Wonder.
My name is Richie T. Stedman, host of The Cultural Hall. Find it online at theculturalhall.com or all the suspicious places that you would find stuff like that at The Cultural Hall. Also a producer of the Radio from Hell show on X96 in Salt Lake City, and various other things that you won't care about if you're listening to this, but other projects at all.
My name is Geraldine Hasselpool. I'm from Medford, Oregon, right on the California border. I'm a mother of five children and a grandmother of one child, and been married for 24 years this year. I work as a graphic artist. You can see my work at geraldinepool.com, and I also have some of my Mormon printed memes and stuff for sale at a place called papersachet.com. I blog for Feminist Mormon Housewives and Rational Faiths. I moderate the Feminist Mormon Housewives Facebook group and the Sunstone Hub Facebook group. So I got a lot going on.
So for our second question, we wanted to hear a little bit about how long they've been attending Sunstone. So we asked them how long you've been attending Sunstone, and why do you believe that it is a valuable resource, or it's valuable for people to attend these types of conferences? So let's go ahead and go to that question.
I've been attending Sunstone for maybe 2014, so maybe 10 years, maybe even more than that now. And so for me, it's community. That's the primary reason I come here. It's a place to get together with a wide spectrum of Mormons and people interested in Mormonism and have a passion for Mormonism, where we get to talk and hang out and share feelings and all that stuff. So it is fascinating, because when I first started coming 10 years ago or so, I was probably the only person under the age of 50 there. And people, all these, you know, older people would come up and they're so excited to see someone young. And now the demographic certainly changed, where you have a lot more younger people attending. So
Sunstone was doing what the internet discourse does for Mormon culture. Sunstone was doing it in the 1970s and 80s and 90s. Sunstone is a big umbrella for discussion on what it means to be Mormon, Mormon studies, theology. It began as the Sunstone Theological Symposium in 74, 75. No, actually, the symposium began in, I want to say, 79. The magazine, I think, began in 74, 75. So it started as a theological symposium, and that's still the crux, the core, I think, of what Sunstone is and does. But it's also branched out to include a lot of social and anthropological studies and, of course, feminism, feminist theology, arts, literary studies. I mean, pretty much any area of study that relates to Mormonism is appreciated and allowed at Sunstone. Also, all points of view. I mean, anybody on the spectrum, this is my favorite thing about Sunstone, is the big tent umbrella. Anybody on the Mormon spectrum, from fundamentalist practicing polygamists to feminist theologians to conservative LDS members to BYU professors to scholars outside of the Mormon faith and tradition, everybody can come and present at Sunstone. And everyone is not always agreed with. Sometimes they get booed, but but everyone is welcome here. And Sunstone has worked very hard over the years to maintain that balance of an open forum where all points of view on Mormonism are welcome and are expressed and coexist. It's truly cosmopolitan.
Well, I attended my first Sunstone back, it would have been in the mid-1980s. So it was a long time ago. And in those days, you had BYU professors here. I mean, it was, and then you'd have, you know, fundamentalists. And I think the first time I came, I was working for a used bookstore, and I manned the book table. And it was just kind of this eye-opening experience, you know, all these different types of Mormons gathered and you know, kind of a eye-opening experience to see, you know, all this different these different perspectives.
This is my third year attending Sunstone. This is my first year that I've spoken at Sunstone. Sunstone has a tremendous heritage and legacy within within Mormon studies and just the cultural conference gap that I think is missing within Mormonism. But it's been going, what, I think the first Sunstone Symposium was back in the 1970s, so it's got a great heritage to it. And I think that it's just something that more active Latter-day Saints should support as a broader discussion of what Mormonism is, and an opportunity to meet an awful lot of great scholars, great people, and people of diverse thought. And I think that that's something that that I hope that people of my generation and younger generations will continue to support and will want to continue building into the future. This is something that I think, because it started back in the 1970s with a specific with a certain generation, it runs the risk, I think, of over time losing its membership and its appeal, especially as everything seems to be moving online. But there's really nothing like getting out and meeting people in person and hearing people speak in person. A lot of people that we meet on Facebook in different groups, this is the opportunity to come out and actually meet these people one-on-one, put a face to a name, and make new friendships.
When Peggy Fletcher and Scott Kenny came to see me when I was editor of Dialogue, said they were starting a new magazine, journal, and I said, yeah, I'd be very happy to support it. Ask them what they were going to call it, and they said Whetstone. And I said, I think you can, there's a better choice than that. And they said, what? And I said, why don't you call it Sunstone? And in the current issue of Sunstone, the magazine, the very back page, there is my statement on why the symbolism of both sun and stones and why that represents what I think of the best of the Sunstone enterprise.
I'm off and on probably for about 5 years or so, although I was aware of it all the way back, even in college, so about 20 years ago. And have been aware of the magazine and have subscribed to the magazine off and on for longer than 5 years. Benefits, I think it's a great place to have a community around intellectual issues, mental health issues, spiritual issues, that seems to provide a safe space for difference of thought and kind of a safe space for Mormons who identify on any part of that spectrum, from traditional, maybe more Orthodox believers to ex-Mormons, or even people who aren't necessarily Mormon but align themselves somehow or advocate with Mormons on certain issues. So just really a nice, neat space to meet all kinds of different people who care about Mormonism in one way or another.
I've been involved with Sunstone since 1982, my first symposium, where I presented a paper called The Phenomenon of the Closet Doubter. And that kind of started me off, and I've been a volunteer for Sunstone over the years and been involved with them for many years and have been on the board. So I really think this is a valuable organization.
I've never actually been to Sunstone before, and they had me present today. I was at the end, so I only got to present for about 5 minutes, but it was awesome, and I look forward to coming back again in the future. Anytime that you can have a group of people who are really just striving to understand or to be their best or to, you know, figure out their path with God or with their family or, you know, figuring out the trials that they have. Anytime you have a group of people that are all just trying to figure it out and be better, I think that's awesome. It's a huge faith-promoting experience. So if anyone's never gone before, like I had before today, I encourage people to come out.
This is my first Salt Lake Sunstone. I've been to other Sunstone events, but this is my first actual Salt Lake Symposium. And I feel like it's good, because what it does is it brings people that have relationships online together to have an in-real-life relationship, and it strengthens those bonds. So many of us are looking for community, and an online community can only go so far. Once you connect outside of a website or Facebook, those bonds are so much stronger and supportive.
Then the third question was, if for these people that are highly dedicated to Mormonism, yet often highly critical, if you couldn't be a Mormon, what would you be?
If I couldn't be, it's like asking if I couldn't be human or if gravity didn't exist, like what would I do? I mean, it's just, Mormonism's in my blood. It's my worldview. It's how I see, live, think, eat, drink. And so, I don't know. I'm half Japanese, so perhaps Buddhist. I don't know a whole lot about Buddhism, but that would resonate with me. At least the little bit I know is something, you know, focusing more on the present life and conditions of the present rather than gearing life towards something else.
Oh my gosh, if I couldn't be Mormon. Well, I see myself as more than Mormon. I'm Mormon, but I'm also more than Mormon. And I answered that question for myself already. When I was excommunicated, I went to early Christianity and found Gnostic Christianity, and that's kind of my home. But also just mysticism, you know, mystic traditions, everything from ancient mystery rites to Kabbalah. Mystic traditions appeal to me. I find myself there. That's my home as well.
Well, that's a tough one. I really have a thing for Catholicism, so I'm very interested in Catholicism. I served a Mormon mission in France. That was back in the days when Bruce R. McConkie's Mormon doctrine was around, and you know, the people on my mission kind of associated Catholicism with a great and abominable church. And I remember on my mission, you know, the first time I went into a Catholic cathedral, I was just kind of awestruck by how amazing it was, and I felt this deep sense of the sacred there. And so I've always had a real big affinity for Catholicism. I love the Community of Christ. You know, that does the Joseph Smith stuff. I'm really interested in the Nauvoo era ideas of Mormonism, though. So that's, you know, in terms of that, I wouldn't get that in the Community of Christ. Gosh, That's a tough one. I teach religious studies, so I'm interested in all religions, but I guess those would be my top two.
Religiously, I'd probably be a high church Episcopalian. I'm a real fan of liturgy and ritualization. I think that the Episcopalian faith would probably attract me more just because it's more of a liberalized faith tradition. I also love Catholic liturgy, but Catholicism is not liberalized enough to this point at this time that it would really appeal to me. But yeah, I really like the call and response, standing, kneeling, smells and bells, kind of church liturgy. I think the closest we get to that within the LDS tradition is the temple liturgy. So I'm one of those weird liberal Mormons who actually likes the temple because of its liturgical aspects.
Episcopalian.
And why?
Because I'm kind of high church. I love the elevated liturgy. I love the music. I love the focus on praise of God. And I really admire the social activism of the Episcopal Church. You go to an Episcopal Church and there are all kinds of things happening between the church and the community. Lots of outreach both to the local community and to the world. So I go to other churches. I'm on the Marin Interfaith Council. I'm very interested in how other people believe and how they worship, but I have a special feeling for Episcopalian form of worship.
Wow, that's a good question. So I don't know much about it because I have to admit I've never been, but from what I hear, and even from our founding father, Joseph Smith, I think Unitarianism is an interesting thing to look into and probably something I will be looking into more specifically, just, you know, as another option.
If I couldn't be Mormon, then I would like to be a follower of Jesus.
If I couldn't be Mormon, what would I be? I think I would be a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints if I could not be Mormon. Let me think about that. If I could not be Mormon, I suppose that I would hope that the title of Mormon is just a title, and I hope that I would still treat people just as well as I do, and that I would still strive to know my Heavenly Father like I do.
I would probably be a dog. I like dogs. But like a dog that lives a really long time, but isn't a little yippy dog, so I don't know. If I couldn't be Mormon, what would I be? Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I'm born and raised Mormon. It's so hard for me to think beyond that. I did, for a religion class in college, I attended the Catholic Church for 6 weeks. And I really enjoyed that ritual and the music, and it just felt very appropriate. And of course, the new Pope. I mean, I have complete Pope envy, so... maybe I'd be Catholic.
For the fourth question, we asked him, what is one of your favorite aspects of Mormonism?
Community, which is also my least favorite aspect as well, so it's complicated.
Lay ministry, number one. That's one of the things that brought me back. Mormonism has an astonishing grasp and embodiment and practice of truly lay ministry and discipleship. I also love the fact that it reclaims the notion of temples and sacred mystery rites and temple rites. I love Mormon history and Mormon origins. My relationship to Mormonism, it tends to be intellectually centered, and you can be fully immersed in participating in Mormonism, even if you, well, I won't say fully participating, but you can feel like you're a part of it and be participating, even if you're not active, inactive, even if you don't like the church. If you participate in Mormon discourse and history, so many people who've left the church and no longer believe are still fully immersed in Mormon studies and Mormon history because it's so engaging and enthralling to them. And I think that's, in a way, the center of my relationship to Mormonism. It's intellectual and historical and theoretical and textual, and it's scholarly, but on the practical lived experience, I love it because it's my family. It's my home. I immerse myself in church every Sunday, and I don't go there for intellectual discussion and debate. I go there to immerse myself in the body of Christ and the positive energy of all those bodies gathered together with a common goal of having a spiritual experience together. So I love the lived aspect and the community and the family that it gives me. But and I'm embarrassed to say that that's probably secondary. I live in my head, and my main relationship with Mormonism is intellectual and theological, but it's also deeply spiritual. And the two go together. The intellectual and the spiritual go together. I live in my head. They're both in my head. And I relate to Mormonism on a deeply spiritual level, but also deeply intellectual. And then the lived experience is secondary, but it's so important to me now. I'm finding that even more so now.
I love the concept of community within Mormonism. I think that's both a difficult issue and a really important issue. It's difficult because for a lot of us who maybe don't think exactly like everybody else in our neighborhoods or in our wards, it can be fairly isolating at times. You can feel kind of alone. But at the same time, I really think community is important. I think it's important to be able to learn to work with people who aren't like you. And one of the things I love about Mormonism is that our communities are formed based on geography. So you are forced to be associating with your neighbors. I know in today's world, it's really easy to be separated from people who don't think like you. You can know people miles and miles away who are just exactly like you, but you may not know your next door neighbor. And so I think community is one of the more important parts of Mormonism. Of course, I love the theology. I think the mind expanding kind of big ideas of Mormonism are just really cool, really breathtaking.
Definitely the crazy history. It's a very frontier American antebellum 19th century religious movement that is very reflective of the big questions that were happening at the time of the era of the common man and the Jacksonian age and what democracy means and what it is to have this republic, which at this stage was only a couple of generations old, and trying to create what the American identity is. And with that comes trying to create a religious identity. And Mormonism is to me a fascinating movement, in so much that it was really kind of a rejection of the pluralism that was emerging during this period. And while I personally am a fan of pluralism, I think that studying the history of a movement that was trying to find its center in exclusive truth and the rejection of a pluralistic society is incredibly fascinating. You can learn an awful lot from it from a sociological standpoint, if nothing else.
I think most Mormons don't understand what a radically rich theology we have. Mormonism, in some ways, is the most radically wonderful theological construct in the world. Its promise, its understanding of the world before and the world after, its understanding of the purpose of this life is so transcendent that for me that I find myself thrilled by Mormonism's doctrine and by the way in which we are given opportunities to put it into practice in a very pragmatic way. So it works both on the kind of larger scope of ideas and concepts, but it also works as I try to make it work in my individual life.
I think my favorite parts about Mormonism have to do with doctrines regarding the expansiveness of our experience as human beings and spiritual beings. So, kind of concepts that seem simple, but when you really think about them, they can be pretty deep, like eternal progression. That's a pretty interesting concept. The concept of deity being female and male. The concept of relationships lasting longer than just maybe a mortal existence. The concept of how experience transcends pain and joy. Kind of the opposite factors of those things and how that comes to fruition in our own individual experiences. yeah, I just think those are all really wonderful things to contemplate about our existence and how we progress, not only in this world, but the possibility of like eternal energy existing, you know.
One of my favorite aspects of Mormonism is the communities. We have a special, unique opportunities to be organized into communities, and I think that's the strength of the church, local leadership over local groups.
My favorite aspect of Mormonism is community. I love it. I love people who are willing to help out other people. I love people that when you need to meet another Mormon, there's some common ground. Even if there's some disagreements on that common ground, there is some commonality that I just love.
One of my favorite aspects of Mormonism as a religion is that we are free to pursue our own truth. We do have people who are telling us who and what to do and what to believe. But ultimately, in the end, we'll be judged on our own relationship with Jesus Christ and with God. And I think that's beautiful. So I like that. The things that I love about Mormonism as a culture are things like this, that there's such a wide variety of opportunity for people to create community with their common background.
And for the fifth question, if you had to provide a critique against Mormonism, what would that critique be?
My biggest critique of Mormonism would be the assumption that the institutional church is the embodiment of the kingdom of God. Flesh on that. This idea that I think we tie, or here's my critique, this idea that salvation is ultimately about the afterlife. And I think that if we look at closely, salvation is much more a temporal thing about freeing people from the oppressive natures of life and freeing people from present suffering and present difficulties. And I think we too much focus on the afterlife and see the church as the important aspect, because the church is all about the afterlife. And I think we end up focusing on that too much.
Oh, critiquing Mormonism. Well, I'm a feminist. I'm a feminist theologian. My critique has been the same for about 30, 40, actually since high school years, which is that the status of women and their equal ability and potential with the men in the faith could be more fully expressed and embodied and named and articulated. And I'm here to help that process happen. I'm playing my part in that to help bring forth what I see currently in Mormonism as a process of fullness and coming more into the fullness of itself. I see this as the most exciting time to be a feminist in the church, because I think women's history, women's empowerment, particularly the aspects that we've lost or forgotten, are coming back. And it's the most exciting time, I think, for feminists and for women in Mormon history, in spite of, you know, backlashes and setbacks and obviously the current disappointing setback with the disciplines that have been happening. Along with that, coexisting with that, there's a tremendous process of reclaiming what we've lost and bringing that forward, lost knowledge, lost empowerment, lost history. It's the church is fully engaged in reclaiming all of its history, and it's a very exciting time.
I guess that would also go back to community. We tend to value a kind of sameness among ourselves. I think that's unfortunate. This kind of cultural conformity that we have, I think, can be very difficult for people. I happen to be a Democrat in Utah County, which, you know, coming out as a Democrat in Utah County is probably, you know, a bigger deal than, you know, coming out as, if I told my neighbors I was a Muslim terrorist, I mean, they would probably react the same way. So, I think sometimes that sense of community can be really problematic, because we want everybody to be exactly the same, and we often have this tendency to see you know, a kind of sameness of what Mormons should be like. And yet I think in Mormonism, you know, the theology really demands a kind of there's a central paradox there between conformity and being part of that community, and yet being true to your own self and your own identity and your own, you know, that notion of integrity, I think, is really important to Mormonism. So, you know, at its core, I think Mormonism really demands that we be who we are. And so that tension, I think, is one that we often have trouble living with, but it's an important one.
It's tough because, you know, Mormonism, I would say in about the 1950s and 60s, really emerged as a faith that was going to embrace conservative religious fundamentalism. This is post-World War II era. We're talking Ezra Taft Benson and Joseph Fielding Smith and Harold B. Lee and others. They really seem to move into that direction of conservatism, and that really seems to be the dominant mentality now that kind of emerged out of that. So I guess that would be a critique for me, but that's going to be based more on my personal sensibilities and my personal, I guess you would say, political outlook. I'm not a fan of conservative fundamentalism in religion. So that's something that I grapple with being an active LDS church member. It's just that kind of a tone and environment. But I understand why it's that way, where it emerged from historically, and I understand why that's going to be such a challenge to move away from in the future, if ever.
Well, I think, as I said in the session that I was just in, I think Mormonism is dominated too much by a conservative social political ideology, which tends to warp the way that people see the church. I think the way that most people, when people find out I'm a Mormon, very often their response is not immediately positive. And I think that's because we have allowed a certain image of the church to predominate. And so I think that for me, it's unfortunate that the church could be more balanced in its conservative, liberal, progressive personality. I think the church could also be much more international. I've just come back from the Philippines and Colombia, where I've been working with trying to address malnourishment in the church. And those people have a perspective on the church that is very different from that which we have or that people have here at the Heartland. So I think we need to be more inclusive, more expansive. We need to reach toward the ideals that were outlined in the great revelations of Joseph Smith.
I think my probably biggest critique currently is when principles become out of balance with others. So for example, when we look at the Garden of Eden story in Mormonism, I think that there's the principle of obedience, which Adam chooses. And then there's the principle of self-authority, which I think Eve chooses. And I think they're both equally important principles. Right now, culturally, obedience is trumping all other principles. And I think that can be very harmful to our sense of self-authority, our sense of self-agency, many other Mormon principles that are equally important.
The only critique I might have right now is maybe a little less diversity than I would like. I think we're moving in that direction, though, with the recent talks by general authorities showing that diversity is becoming more and more acceptable.
Mormons need to be more friendly. That's it. We need to be in the way that we do church discipline, to the way that we do meetings, to the way that we do that. We say that we do that. We encourage people to do that, but we actually need to be more friendly.
There's too much infighting. We like replay that holy war, the BYU-Utah game out in our own wards all the time. Between the true blue BYU team and the red Utes. I feel like we divide too much and argue too much and other and try to win with righteousness or with truth. And the church that I want to be a part of is unified, one heart, one mind, Zion.
Those were some awesome people. So that's interesting to get to know some of these figures that you hear about either in blogs or other podcasts, or you've read some of their books maybe. Get to know them a little bit more, hear their voice. That's a lot of fun. So I look forward to hearing about these other people that you've interviewed in future episodes. And I thought we might talk a little bit about some of the series that we have planned and that we're working on.
Absolutely. So as you said, there will probably be four of these kind of episodes. So maybe three more that are kind of going over some of these responses to these questions of various individuals. And we have some really great people who were interviewed. And what are some of the other projects that we're kind of thinking about?
All right. So we've got the first one that I started is the Seek Ye Out of the Best podcast, where we kind of rephrase that scripture a little bit, where we're seeking out of the best books. And we just find through listening to podcasts or TED Talks or other media, we find a topic that's really interesting and we could either learn from in Mormonism or we could critique Mormonism. We did one about parenting. We did one about Jonathan Haidt and his moral psychology. So we'll have more of those coming. And another series is Faith Transitions, where I'm interviewing all the permabloggers on rational faiths and letting them tell their story. So you and I will do that eventually. And we've done one with Lori Berkman, Jonathan Cannon, and Jeremy Timothy that's already been released. And I've got one that will be released in another couple weeks. So there's the Faith Transition Stories. And then the newest one that I'm working on is Mormon Scientists. And I've got a series of scientists that are either well-respected Mormons or they're at BYU. Presumably that would mean they're still respected. And I interviewed J. Ward Moody, who is an astronomer at BYU, and we talked about why he's an astronomer, why he's a scientist. He explained the Big Bang theory, and then we talked about, you know, how that affects his faith and how it either enhances or changes his faith a little bit. And so I've got a couple other scientists that I'm either got lined up or in the process of lining up to talk about some of the issues that sometimes on the surface they seem like it's, you can't really be a scientist. You can't believe in evolution or whatever. At least it seems that way on the surface. And so we'll talk with some people that are clearly in these fields of believing in evolution or believing in an old earth. And we'll discuss how that intersects and affects their interpretation of scripture and their faith.
And that is so awesome, because some of my favorite kind of topics, especially in talking about Mormonism, are exactly as you were saying, some of these different paradigms that we have where we're like, oh, I know exactly how whatever is, you know, I believe I know exactly what the church feels about this, or I have all of the answers in this particular regard. And it's interesting as you kind of dive into some of those things when you're even going after a scientific question or of any regard, it's always interesting to recognize how much we have to learn and how much we can kind of change some of those different paradigms. And these questions of scientists and the ways that we can kind of engage with some of these different questions as well, I think it's fascinating. So that's really exciting. Yeah, and of course, we have lots of other really interesting things that are in the works as well. So if you aren't already, go ahead and subscribe to our podcast, and you can do that in various ways. One is obviously iTunes that you can subscribe there, and we're also in Stitcher. But the thing I wanted to just quickly mention is that the way that iTunes SEO works, so the way that people can actually find podcasts and find different for example, to be able to find our podcast, one of the ways that the search engine for iTunes works is the more ratings that you have, the easier it is to find. So if you're listening to the podcast, if you're enjoying some of the different things that we're doing and are excited to see some of the things in the future, please go to iTunes, leave us a review. You can always give us any kind of feedback by going to our website as well.
All right. Well, thanks for listening in, and feel free, as always, to join in the conversation on the blog and share your thoughts that you've had while listening, or other questions that you might that might have popped up in your head. And we'll catch you on the next episode.